Now, if you're all confused about all those sheets that you have in front of you, so I want to tell you, I'm also confused. And what we're going to try and do is we're going to try and make some kind of order out of the confusion. There are the... Just listen carefully and you'll get it straight. There were two sheets that were stapled together that was from Sefer Yirmiyahu that we started learning last week, chapters 50 and 51. What you should have received this morning are another two single sheets. And all of a sudden, what strikes me as being so fascinating is one sheet is Yeshayahu, and one sheet is Yechezkel. Now, if you don't have it, then there's a woman at the entrance there who's supposed to take care of all of that. Here is all sorts of pandemonium. What? A lady? But I said woman? Dispose of these sheets one after another. Take the sheet that is from Sefer Yeshayahu. Take the sheet that is from Sefer Yeshayahu. How you doing? You see there's a pasuk that's underlined? I can take care of that very quickly. There's a story to that pasuk. The story to that pasuk goes back 11 years. If you're not going to listen to me, you're going to get even more confused than you already are. About 11 years ago, the morning after the first Scud attacks, I got a call from a member of my congregation. Rabbi, she says she's so terrified, she's falling apart at the seams. She needs a pasuk to keep her going through these difficult times. And there, of course, with the help of God, this pasuk rolls off my, just comes gushing straight out. And she's so thrilled. A half an hour later, I get a series of phone calls. Rabbi, you should hear about this pasuk. Right? The pasuk that I told her then, and the one that we should keep in mind as the days begin to pass. Yeshayahu says the following, in the name of God, Lech Ami, go my people, Bo Bechadorecho, come into your rooms, Usgor Dolosecho Badecho, and close the door behind you. And never forget, I remember what my job was during the last Gulf War. The guy who put the shmata, the red shmata on the floor. Sgor Dolosecho Badecho, close the door behind you. Chavi kima'at rega. Wait for a little while. Ad ya'avor za'am, until anger will pass. Can there be a pasuk more apt? Isn't Yeshayahu? Wasn't he talking to us then? That's all. Lech Ami, so I want you to remember this pasuk. Lech Ami bo v'chadarecho u'segor d'latecho badecho. And by the way, what it also means is the following. We had it last time. I hope we won't have that again. I mean, there's a possibility maybe that nothing will happen. But we have to be ready for every eventuality. You know, the heroes and the heroines who say, we don't need gas masks, we don't need the plastic and preparing our rooms. Nonsense. Yeshayahu says in the name of God, Lech Ami Bo B'chadarecho. There are times you have to go into the room, close the door, put up the plastic, put up the tape, make sure you have water in there, make sure that you have cans of food, and don't forget a can opener. I have a sneaky suspicion there are many people who have all sorts of cans of food, but they don't have a can opener.
You can drink water.
Hi. For a while, Adya Varazam until anger passes. That's all. I just want you to know that first. So we took care of Yishayahu. We are going to need, for later on in this year, we're going to need on the second side of Yishayahu, on the other side, there's one paragraph there. Just remember where you put it, because we're going to need it later on this year. Okay? Now, that's one sheet out of the way. Yecheskel. Yes.
Can I have one slight correction?
Yeah.
It was 12 years ago. I gave birth a week before.
It was 91 and we're in 2003. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Then, of course, I told you the possibility of that. But you know, they have to tell you how to put on a gas mask then, and we have to tell you how to put on a gas mask now. Then I'm going to give you quickly another pasuk that I said then, and that you should learn this pasuk and know it well. This happens to be a pasuk about which I wrote an article that appeared in the Hatzofer 2 weeks before the Gulf War, so you have it on your next sheet. Side 1, it's in Yecheskel, Pasuk Chet, chapter 38:8. Just remember, you have to be able to cite chapter and verse. I mean, these are last minute instructions to you, because we won't be learning here next week, and it's unbelievable. I can't watch. If they talk and say, Acharei HaShvayesrei, the day after the 17th, we're talking about Purim. Unbelievable. God has an awesome sense of humor. I'm telling you, this Titzachot. Here is a pasuk in Yecheskel, and Yecheskel is talking about those who at the end of days, during that period of the end of days, are going to come up against Eretz Yisrael. They're going to attack Eretz Yisrael. He literally, these are the chapters that talk about Gog and Magog. Gog and Magog represent our nations, and they are many nations, a coalition of nations that are going to rise to attack Eretz Yisrael. So Yecheskel, in the name of God, says the following. Unbelievable. Miyomim Rabim Tipakev. After many years that you have sinned toward me, Tipakev, you will be remembered to be punished. You caused a great deal of suffering to my people over many years, and then is going to come the time when you are going to receive your punishment. On the other side, Bracharit Hashanim, at the end of years, Toho, you're going to come against Eretz, El Eretz, you're going to come against the land. Now the Pasuk is going to give four descriptions of the land, three descriptions of the population, and one of the land itself. I'm going to punish you when you're going to come against the land. Number one, Mishovevet Mincherev. They are a population that has returned from the sword or because of the sword. I can tell you exactly how I read it. Part of the population of that country will be people who came out of the concentration camps, who from the sword came to Eretz Yisrael. And you know who came afterwards? There is a second part of this the population of this land, mikubetzet me'amim rabim, those who've been gathered in from many nations, from all over the world, Jews started coming to this land. Where are they settled right now? Al Hore Yisrael. Geographically, they are on the mountains of Israel, Asher Hoyu L'chor Bot Tamid, that had always been desolate. But what are they now? They're not desolate anymore. What Yechezkel really is referring to here is something that Yechezkel himself already said a few chapters earlier. A pasuk that I have quoted for you so many times, where Yechezkel says in the name of God a command to Hore Yisrael, to the mountains of Israel. Va'atem, Hore Yisrael, you mountains of Israel, Amchem titenu, ufed yechem tisu, give out your branches and your fruit, La'am Yisrael, for my people Israel. The mountains of Yisrael had been commanded to begin giving out the produce that will sustain a population. And now, the fact is, all of this is taking place after the mountains of Israel that have always been desolate are now not desolate. And they have a population that have returned from the sword, and those who've been gathered in from many nations. And then, fascinating, Vihi me'amim hutza'ah. And there's a third population that has been, that has joined the first two that are already in Eretz Yisrael, me'amim hutza'ah, a people who came out of another nation. The Malbim says on the other side, you don't have to go look for it, you can just trust me that he says it. He says there's another people that has joined them, a people who had not been permitted to leave their land, and then all of a sudden they are granted permission to leave their land and come to Eretz Yisrael. This was extremely apt 12 years ago during the Gulf War, because as the Scuds were falling, Jews were coming out of Russia to Eretz Yisrael. Vihi me'amim hutza'ah. This is the third component of the population, a people that all of a sudden are now permitted to leave their land. V'yoshvu, so you should know, you enemies of Israel, you had better know the following. V'yoshvu lovetach kulam. They are all going to live in Eretz Yisrael in security. And regardless of what your plans may be, they are simply not going to succeed. Now, Rashi, which is underlined, Rashi am mishovevet mecherev, on the same side we're on now, yoshveu min hagola shegol shon yidei cherev oyev. Rashi says, those who've returned from the sword, so it can mean those who came from the sword, or those who had been expelled from the country by the source of the sword of the enemy, and now they've come back. Asher hoyu l'chor v'tamid, the mountains of Israel that were always desolate, zeh shomim rabot, for many years now the country has been desolate. V'samuch l'boacha aleo chosru, but just about the time, near to the time that you come against Israel, Jews have already returned, and the mountains are giving out their produce. The next Rashi, unbelievable. This is Vihi me'amim hutza'ah. God brought them all out from the nations to come back to Eretz Yisrael. V'hoyo l'chol asum alev. You should have paid attention to the fact. Shehi me'amim hutza'ah. This people has been taken out from amongst the nations of the world. V'hamotzio min ha'amim. The God who took them out from the nations of the earth, the world, and brought them back here. Lo yazdenu biyodecha. It's not going to leave them in your hands. You have to be a fool to think that the Rebbeinu Shalom brought Jews back to Eretz Yisrael so that they should suffer here and Chas V'Shalom be destroyed. You should have thought of that. you should have paid attention to the fact that the phenomenon of Jews returning from all over the world to Eretz Yisrael, this is an act of God. And you think God brought them here to make it easier for you to destroy them? You should have thought about it. And because you didn't, your day of judgment is coming. The punishment is coming for all those who come up against Eretz Yisrael. That's Yecheskel. Remember that. So we've now taken care of two sheets of paper. Now, by the way, it's of course fascinating that we're really giving you Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, and Yecheskel. By the way, you can of course impress all your friends and all of your neighbors if you learn these psukim ba'al peh and just tell somebody, well, didn't you hear? Leich ami, bom b'chaderecho, uskor b'lasecho ba'adecho, chavi kimadecha, ad yaforazam. I mean, they'll faint as they listen to you quote Yeshayahu. And then if you can even get the pasuk in your Yecheskel straight, it's an unbelievable. And first of all, you, I can tell the truth, I can't say it to everybody. You know, other people, we have to sort of leave with the impression as though I know all of Tanakh, the way I know these psukim. I happen to be learning Yeshayahu two or three weeks before the Gulf when I came across this pasuk, and it just went through. For some strange reason, I don't know why, I happened to be learning Yecheskel around that time too, and I came to the pasuk. Lamed Ches, chapter 38, and like the pasuk just was a double whammy. There are another few psukim that I know, but that's about it. That's the extent of my knowledge. So now, we'll take you back to chapter 50 in Yirmiyahu. And remember, the chapter 50, we are relating it not only to the events that are about to transpire, but there's also an extremely important and significant relationship between all of this and Purim. And we pointed out last week that these two chapters in Yirmiyahu are talking about the fall of Bavel. The fall of Bavel, Yirmiyahu himself is going to say, the ones who are going to bring Babylon down, and remember, Yirmiyahu was saying this many years before the actual events take place, that Bavel is going to fall before the forces of the Medes and the Persians. Of course, once we get into Megillat there, we are already in the period of the Persian Empire. We also pointed out that Bavel came crumbling down as a result of an onslaught by the forces of Daryavesh, Darius, king of the Medes. Who was his son-in-law? Koresh, king of the Persians, was his son-in-law. Darius is going to die a few years later, and Koresh is going to become the king of Persia, because now in this partnership between the Medes and the Persians now become the dominant partner. And of course, during the whole period of the Megillah, the 13 years of Megillat Esther, that's the period it all covers. We're talking about the Persian Empire, which is under Ahasuerus. So here it is, the destruction of Bavel is going to take place. Remember also, we pointed out last week, also if we're talking about God's sense of humor, we talked about the fascinating sense of humor, that here is Ahasuerus, who's so frightened and terrified that Jews may ultimately make their way back to Eretz Yisrael and establish themselves as an independent state, and that's the last thing in the world that he wants. He doesn't want Jews to be able to return to Eretz Yisrael, because an independent Jewish state is something that's a source of grave danger for the entire Middle East. That's the way he saw it. And it's amazing people still see it the same way 2,500 years later. I did quote to you the Roman historian who said that when Judea rebels, the entire Roman Empire quakes. I didn't quote that last week. Sounds good that I repeat. About 400 years later, Judea was the smallest of the provinces of the Holy Roman Empire. The Holy Roman Empire girdled the globe. There were big countries that were under the heel of Rome. The only ones they were concerned about were Judea. Because when Judea rebels, the entire Roman Empire quakes. The same thing was true in the days of Ahasuerus. There is to be no, there will be no Jewish state in Eretz Israel, because if they gain independence, they will become a destructive force in the Middle East. And in order to maintain his empire, that's still he can do. He will do everything but permit that. And that's why twice, when Esther comes to him and makes a request, so he says to her, "Ad chatzi ha'malchut v'tayas," until half of the kingdom. In other words, we always get the impression as though he's being so
generous.
He's not being generous. He's laying down the guidelines, you know, the roadmap. And the roadmap is the following, Esther. You can talk about anything you want, but if you're going to start talking about Yerushalayim, forget about it. The freeze on settlement activity in Yerushalayim remains in force. He froze it, and that's the way it's to remain. So I pointed out the God's great humor that in the first chapter of the Megillah, with the death of Vashti, Ahasuerus, who puts Vashti to death, is therefore the one who is really acting as God's messenger. That's the ultimate and final destruction of the house of Nebuchadnezzar. And then when he marries Esther in the second chapter, what he's really doing is he's preparing the undoing of his own policy, because Esther's son is going to be Darius Doryovesh II, and Doryovesh II is going to lift the freeze on construction in Yerushalayim, and he's going to permit Jews to build the Beit HaMikdash and Yerushalayim. So here it is. This poor Ahasuerus over there in the middle, the fact is that he is like a robot, a marionette in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And by the way, that's exactly what Koresh was. Yeshayahu talks about the fact, Koresh Avdi. They talk about Nebuchadnezzar Avdi. These are instruments of God's will. Now we go back. Yes?
Where did you get this idea that
Darius
possessed his
God? It says so. In Ezra, in Nehemiah. In Nehemiah, I think it's chapter 3 or 4. Since I'm not so sure, I'm not pulling out in Nehemiah that fast. And the Malbim, Rashi says on the spot, Doryovesh Benoshel Esther Hoyo. He was the son of Esther.
There were two of them.
Yes, I called him Darius the second.
Right, because Darius is the first.
That's right. Darius the first is the one who, together with his father, the Lord Koresh, bring down the Babylonian Empire. This is going to be Darius the second. Chazal say, Benoshel Esther Hoyo, he was the son of Esther. Now we're going back to, maybe I'll even do this right now. So we'll take care of the Yirmiyahu sheet. We've got the Yeshayahu sheet. And you'll see how this is going to fit into this year. We talked last week. Last week we talked about the fact that Belshazzar, king of Babel, and then Ahasuerus, king of Persia, all attempted to interpret and understand the words of Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu had said that at the end of 70 years, Babel is going to come crushing down. At the end of 70 years, Jews are going to rebuild or begin the rebuilding of a second commonwealth. Nobody was sure when the 70 years began, or they thought they knew, and they both Belshazzar and Ahasuerus miscalculated. Now, I did point out last week, and this is very important to remember, that Ahasuerus was in a sense a worse Russia than Belshazzar. Why does Belshazzar, the king of Babel, try to figure out the 70 years? Because Yirmiyahu, in these two chapters, there are two prophecies. Prophecy number one is the destruction of Babel. Prophecy number two is the rise of the Jewish people again. Belshazzar is worried sick about the destruction of Babel. So when he calculates that Babel, the 70 years that Yirmiyahu had talked about are over, he sighs with relief. Ahasuerus, when he calculates the 70 years, for what is he calculating it? Babel has already been destroyed. There's only the second prophecy of Yirmiyahu. The second prophecy of Yirmiyahu is that Jews are going to return home. What bothers him? You understand what bothers him? Why he's making these feverish calculations? Because he doesn't want Jews to rebuild the second Commonwealth. He doesn't want Jews going home. And then he makes this great party. He makes this party. And of course, that's what we pointed out. The party is to celebrate the idea that he believes Jews are not going to be redeemed. And Jews come and enjoy the party. How? I don't understand. They come to dance and sing and drink at a party that's dedicated to his hope or belief that Jews are not going to be redeemed. But he's a bigger Russia than Belshazzar, because he's not calculating whether he's going to be destroyed. He wants to make sure that Jews are not going to be freed. That's Ahasuerus. Avlo Yoda. There's a famous Gemara in the Masechta Megillah, and the fact is that the Gemara is brought in Shulchan Aruch. The Gemara says the following. Mechayiv Inish, it's not here I'm saying this, Gemara tells you, Mechayiv Inish Mubsumei Bapuria, a person is obligated to get high on Purim, Atalo Yadar, until he does not know, Bein Orohaman Leboruch Marta. Until he doesn't know, I mean, the simple translation is until you don't know the difference between Oror Haman and Baruch Mordechai, which would, of course, leave us with quite a dilemma. What does the Gemara mean? Does the Gemara mean that we should be saying in our drunken stupor, Baruch Haman, or I can't even say the other possibility out of our... What does the Gemara mean? And there have been so many explanations, and here comes a beautiful one, and this is from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, the Tzaddik Livrach. Rav Shlomo Zalman said the following, Amar Maran, Maran will be our rabbi, Rav Shlomo Zalman. Har pshat achi karov le'emet, the pshat that's closest to the truth, in Adalo Yoda, that you should get drunk on Purim until you don't know the difference between Orohom and Borah Mordechai. Bein Orohom and Borah Mordechai, hum ha-shekosot ha-levush, one of the Mepharshim of the Shulchan Aruch wrote, "Sheyeshno gematria sheshavay oror haman lebaruch mordechai." There's a gematria that says oror haman and baruch mordechai are equal in gematria. Now, the words over here were, "Yesh," there is a gematria like that. So of course, I figured it out. Oror haman equals 501. Baruch mordechai equals 502, right? So, you know, you can be small about it and say that, well, you know, it's not exact. Not exact. Okay, that's one way. Okay. The other way is there are various ways of calculating a gematria under certain circumstances. The words themselves add up to one, so that you always can add a one to a gematria. I said, now I know what you're going to say. So I want to add a 1 to Oror Haman, which now makes it 502. So then you're going to say, if you can add a 1 to Baruch Mordechai. I mean, and so what bothers you if Baruch Mordechai is 1 more than Oror Haman? Shouldn't Baruch Mordechai be 1 more than Oror Haman? Anyway, it's brought by the Levush, and if it's brought by the Levush, that means... And you know, you know that I'm not a gematria man. Because you know you can make people can make the silliest ideas can be expressed by gematrias, but when it's brought in the Gemara or it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, then you have to stand in awe before the gematria. So that means on some level, as Rav Shlomo Zalman says, this is a gematria. Or Rahman equals Baruch Mordechai. V'tzarech lishtot. So he says you have to drink your tender limudo. A person should drink more than he normally drinks. He should drink to the point where he can't make the calculation. And the truth is, if you can't make the calculation anymore, it doesn't make a difference whether it's 501 or it's 502. What does he mean? But there's an idea behind it. The kavanas halavush, the intention of the lavush, that's the name of the mufarish, shesh b'nei adam shechoshvim shenes hagodol b'yoter. There are people who think that the great miracle is that we were saved from death. There are others who say that the fall of the Russia, Haman's destruction, is the greater miracle. You have to drink until you reach a point where there's no difference between one or the other. It's all one miracle. I tell you, there's a great deal of meaning to this. We'll get to that in a moment. If you take a look at that footnote that comes with this, Amar Maran came to Miyuchad. Maran said it b'nogei l'marsha ka'ed. Yom HaPurim, he said it on Yom Purim of Tavshin Nun Aleph, the day that the Gulf War was over. Nitzalnu b'chazdei Hashem me'shinei harosha ha'orur. Yimach Shemai, now Yimach Shemai is becoming very topical. The Siyum Milchemet HaMifratz at the end of the Gulf War. You know, there's no point in trying to, the fact that we were saved, that's the Yikar. I don't care what happens to Haman. Let Haman end up in in an old folks home with old dictators, you understand? No. The destruction of the Russia and the salvation of Klal Yisrael, it's all one mess, which is going to bring us to the next very important step. Next very important step is the following. Persia. The Persians and the Medes are the ones who perfected, so to speak, a belief in two deities, two divinities. They believed that there was the God of light and the God of darkness. There was the God of good. There was the God of evil. They did not see good and evil emanating from the same source. This was basic and fundamental to all of Persian thinking. And then it became really the thought of an entire world. Klal Yisrael was always locked in struggle against Persia on this particular issue. So what I'm saying is, anybody who tries to separate and differentiate as though the miracle was one and not the other, or the other and not the one, is in a sense coming close to the point at which he is saying that there's a God who saves Jews and there's a God who destroys Rishayim. No, it all comes from one source. On a Purim, Mechai Vinish Lutzli B'Puri, until you don't know the difference and you know that it's all one miracle. The fact is that this was such a pervasive idea in the world that in davening, and there are many examples in davening where Chachmei Yisrael, the wise men of Israel, injected into the davening ideas so that they should clear our minds. Every day we say, Yotze Or Uvorei Choshech, Osei Shalom Uvorei Hakol. It's all the same. Yotzer or Uvorei Choshech, the one who creates light and makes darkness, it's the same God. Yotzer or Vore Ose Shalom Uvore Asakol. The fact is that it's taken from a pasuk in Yeshayahu, where Yeshayahu says Uvore Ra. Tov and Ra emanate from the same source. It doesn't mean that God creates Ra. It means that God leaves open the possibility for Ra to exist in this world. Because there has to be a balance in the world. The balance in the world calls for the ability to do good and at the self-same time the ability to do evil. If there would be any kind of brakes placed on any one of these two, there would be a lack of balance in the world, and it would sorely affect the ability of man to choose. The Persian world believed, I'm afraid to say that, the two deities, the two Persian deities, take very carefully what I'm saying. I'm not saying what you're going to think I'm going to say. So, you know, you've got to be careful. The two deities of Persia were Astarte and Marduk. Now, if that sounds like Esther and Mordechai to you, it does to me. Right. Don't think for a moment that they were given names after Astarte and Marduk. But if anything, what may be fascinating is that in order for salvation of Klal Yisrael to take place, you needed the two of them working together. Because the two of them working together are the ones that brought about the downfall of Haman and the salvation of the Jewish people. No Astarte and Marduk, two separate forces in the world, but in Esther and Mordechai. Lech Knosis Kol HaYudim, a unity of all of Klal Yisrael. One God, one people, and one source from which everything emanates. Which now brings me to what we were really talking about at the end of last week's year. At the end of last week's year. Now we're going to over two pages on Yirmiyahu. You know, maybe I'll tell you. We started with Yirmiyahu chapter 50, and where were we up to? I'll tell you where we were up to. We had pointed out something very fascinating in Psukim 16, 17, 18, and 19. Where you can find that on the Yirmiyahu pages, would the lady at the door please make sure that Mrs. Weinberg has, you have an extra one there? Okay, that's fine. Kisu Zorea Mibavel, Pasuk 16. Destroy, cut out one who plants from Bavel, the Topes Margal Be'ev Katsir, or the one who's going to hold a scythe with which to harvest at the time of the harvest, Mipnei Cherev Hayona, because of the sort of the structures. I pointed out that the word Yonah is very interesting, and the fact that it means destruction, but you could have thought that it meant tweet tweet, you know, a little bird is calling, peace. Ish el amo yiflu, each person to his nation will turn, the ish la'artso yalusu, and each person will run towards, turn back on. They're getting out of Bavel. Bavel is collapsing, they're leaving. Seh pezuro Yisrael, Israel is a sheep that are dispersed, aragoti dicho, lions are the ones that push them away from his land. Harisha macholot, the first one who consumed him was the king of Ashur. Vezer achron itzmo, we came to the word itzmo, I got all excited there again. Vezer achron itzmo, this last one, itzmo, destroyed his bones. Zeh acharon itzmo. Ah, doesn't the word itzmo mean making bones? The same word has the precise opposite meaning, and I said that in this case, we also have it in English. To bone something means really to be punted. What I didn't notice last week, and I noticed just now as I said it, is the word acholo. And in a moment I'll explain to you the double meanings of the word acholo. But wait. Then we went on to the next pasuk. Lachen komar Hashem tzarkot l'keisul, so says God, the God of hosts. Hinini poked melech bavel. I'm going to, and we talked about all the meanings of the word poked. Poked means to remember, it means to count, it means to measure, it means to punish. And poked also means to be absent. Kasher pokadati el melech Ashur. Then we got to the next pasuk, v'shovavti et Yisrael onoveu, and I will return Israel to her dwelling place. The word v'shovavti is also used in Tanakh to be rebellious, the exact opposite of tshuva. Tshuva is the one who becomes good, and a shovav is the one who is bad or becomes bad. So therefore I pointed out that there is a phenomenon in Hebrew, and there are some of the Mefarshim of all Rav Tzadik HaKohen Lublin. Rav Tzadik in about 5 or 6 of his Sfarim says that every root in Hebrew, in Lashon Kodesh, every root, that's quite a statement, every root in Hebrew means one thing and its opposite. Let me give you, we give you a few examples over here. So I'll give you another few examples. The Shem Yishmuel says the word chet. Chet is sin. I'm going to give you an example of its opposite meaning in modern Hebrew. How do you say to sterilize something? Lachatot. Chitui. The fact is that you have it in Tanakh. Herev kapseini meyavonai. David HaMelech says, cleanse me from my sins, and he uses the word chet. The word chet can mean sin, and it can mean cleansing from sin.
I have something.
I've got it right here. Paul.
Huh?
Paul.
I know what. Everybody knows what helps them best. This is not going to look too good.
Well, this is going to go in my hand.
Wait a minute.
Shamshon Ufol Hirsch. Vayechulu hashamayim v'ha'oretz v'chol tzuva'om. The giving of Torah by Yehu HaShemayim. So he says the following. The root, Kalei, Chof, Lamed He, combines two opposing meanings. Kalei means to destroy, and Kalei means to complete the great work of creation. How do you like that? Two completely opposite meanings in one word. And he goes on to bring many pesukim that he finds. And that's why I say the word ochal. I missed that one. In Pasuk Yud Zayin, se pesudai Yisrael arayoti dechon harishon kacholau. The first one who consumed him. So you know where the achalo comes from? Kalei, destroy. And the vayichulu is its positive meaning. The completion of the most magnificent piece of work in all history. One is destruction, and one is construction. Wait a minute. I'll give you some more. Oh, two classics, two of the great classics of all. Kodesh. Kodesh is holy. A prostitute is a Kedeshah. How in heaven's name? can one word bear two such meanings that are so distant from one another? I'm going to give you one that's nearly as good or nearly as bad. Chesed. Chesed is kindness, right? In Parashas Kedoshim, when they list the illicit relationships, they talk about one and they say, Zimahu, it's ugly, it's chesed. What? An ugly, illicit relationship is chesed. We're talking about a phenomenon in Lashon HaKodesh that has to be understood. So first of all, I want to tell you that Rav Sadia Goyen said that one of the byproducts of this phenomenon is against the Zoroastrian belief, the Persian belief of God of light and God of darkness, God of good and God of evil, the unity of everything in all creation and that everything emanates from one God is expressed in Lashon Kodesh by virtue of the fact that the same verb or the same noun can include two completely opposite ends of the spectrum. Chesed and Kedusha.
Yin Yang, they call it. Yin Yang.
Huh?
Yin Yang. It's the Asian.
Oh yeah, okay. I'm not so up to date out there on the Asian world. The fact is that what's happening during the course of the entire Megillah, what happens through the entire Megillah is dramatic, opposing changes going from one extreme to the other. There's the extreme of Haman rising to power. There's the extreme of Haman crashing down. There's the extreme of Mordechai wearing sack v'efer, ashes going through the streets of Shushan crying out. And then Vayetze, he's taken out on a horse. Koch v'yose, lo'ish. This is not going to sound too good on tape. Kocho yeyosa lo'ish, Asher ha-melech ha-feitz bikoro. The changes that take place during the course of the Megillah are dramatic. Highs and lows, and within short periods of time. Haman is invited to party number one, and he comes home, and he's surrounded by all of his family, and he tells them, oh my, the queen has made a party, and I alone have been invited, and it's... V'chol zeh einenu shoveh li. He tells his wife and all of his advisors, all of this is worth nothing to me. All of this is worth nothing to me when I see that Jew, Mordechai, sitting there, and he doesn't bow down to me. Oh, I'm going to tell you, Hashem Yishmuel, and it's not important whether you understand it or not. That's not important. He says, V'chol zeh einenu shoveh li. Zeh, what's the last letter of zeh? Einenu vav. Shoveh li. You read the last letters of those four words of Haman backwards. Yud, K, Vav, K. Do you know what Haman wants to do? He wants to turn God upside down. Vav, Zeh, Einenu, Shoveh, Li. Lashon Kodesh, therefore, incorporates within the same word completely opposing ideas in order to make it very clear. Everything emanates from one God. There can be extremes. And it also means something else. Anything taken to an extreme becomes negative. chesed. I don't know if I'll be able to speak about this in great length, and I know that we have a time limit on us. But I was walking around with my Yirmiyahu, and a friend of mine told me a word from a fellow Bishop Creighton. I never heard of Bishop Creighton. But boy, he was a pretty smart man. Bishop Creighton said the following, and take every word that I say, listen to it very carefully. No people do so much harm as those who go about doing good. Does that shake you up? I'll say it once more and let it go into your kishkat. No people do so much harm as those who go about doing good. Chesed has to be done with wisdom. You can kill people with chesed. In the headlong rush to do chesed, that's not thought out well, and one doesn't take into consideration all of the ramifications, you can cause a great deal of pain to a lot of people. Everything has to be done with wisdom. I know that I'm saying too much. There's an amazing little sefer, and this is one of those things that we're going to have to do one of these days. Amazing sefer called Mesilat Yesharim. Mesilat Yesharim is the classic Musar text of the yeshiva in the Torah world. Moshe Chaim Litzato. In this sefer, what he does is he describes all sorts of defines modes of action. Zehirut, how to be careful about mitzvahs. Nikiyut, how to be clean of any kind of error, mistake, or sin. Zrizut, to learn how to do a mitzvah and do it with a great deal of zeal. And he also talks about chassidut. Now, in each one of, there must be about 10 different areas that he discusses. He describes the midah, and he explains how you acquire it. Of all of them, only one does he have a chapter called Mishkal HaChassidut, how to weigh Chassidut. You have to weigh Chassidut. You have to weigh it very, very carefully. For example, he says, you can't decide that something is chassidut, an act of great kindness, by a first look. The mind's eye, has to be able to think about what will be the end. Who may be hurt? Well, I'll give a very crude example. Somebody's poor and you want to bring them to eat, you understand? And you make so much fanfare about giving to eat that they die from embarrassment. That's a crude example. They need the food desperately, and you're providing them a suda kiyava melech, but if you don't do it in the right way, that's not chesed at all. They'd rather go hungry than receive chesed that way. I have a particular thing going on in my kishkas, but I'm not going to discuss it now, of an act of chesed that was so destructive to a whole family. It's unbelievably destructive. Because by definition, I'll use chesed as the example for all of the other words. Chesed always means going beyond what is required, right? There are the requirements of Allah, and then there's chesed, going. The chassid is the one who goes beyond. Once you go beyond certain boundaries, you never know where you're going to end up. Once you've broken through boundaries, you may step into territory that is dangerous, dangerous. So that's why the saying chesed, chesed, just as the word kadosh. The word kadosh means holiness. Right, here I'll give a very, I think a good example. Yeah, the Catholic Church decided that Kedusha is celibacy. And do you know what they created in the world? They created a society of people who are promiscuous and who knows how many years. You can't fight nature. You can't fight nature. I mean, in the United States, we know it has turned into a major... all of the problems with priests young boys and who knows what. Because too much Kedusha is going to bring to Kedusha. You can't. Everything has to be with a... everything... with Mishkal, B'midah, B'misorah. Too much chesed becomes an ugliness of chesed. Too much kedusha becomes an ugliness of kedusha. Yes.
Who wrote?
Oh, by the way, that's absolutely true. You're absolutely true. Everyone has to be weighed and measured. And by the way, the Nesilat Yesharim talks about it. He says when a chumrah is in place and when a chumrah is not in place. And he even talks about a person that if you have accepted certain chumrah on yourself, there are many of them that you dare not do in public. Because you will set yourself up as an object of ridicule. You have to weigh and measure everything you do. You're right. A chumrah can become something very chamur.
No.
Not bad. It can also be an indication of one who is a chamor. Right? At the same time, of course, that the Mesilat Yesharim says that you have to know that there are times each person has to judge himself. There may be certain areas in which we need to be nachmer upon ourselves. There are chumrot that are... intellectually and educationally sound, and then there are others that are not. Have I saved myself here from being accused of anything untoward that I shouldn't say? But I believe that to be true. I think that everybody has to know. And I think sometimes a person has to say, you know, I don't want to meet up with that person and talk to him because he upsets me. It upsets me. I'm going to say something I shouldn't say. I'm going to do something I shouldn't do. So it's a great chumrah to just stay out of that person's way. I meet that person. I know we're going to end up in 2 minutes with a talk lashon hara against him. Talk lashon hara. I'm better off if I don't have any conversation with him. Everybody has to find those areas in which they may have their own weakness and there a chumrah in place. But don't be machmir for the whole world. I mean, a person has to understand it for himself and not for others. Ahasuerus was melech hafachfach, the Gemara says that. He was a topsy-turvy person, going from one to the other. He didn't have balance. The idea that words in Lashon Kodesh have double meanings and that there are meanings that can be diametrically opposed to one another is in order that there should be a balance in nature, in the world, and in life. Because that's what Yahdut, classic example, the Zohar is really the one who says it, is Stakel ba'uraita ubora alma. God looked into Torah. Torah was the blueprint for the world. He looked into Torah and he built the world. So whatever went into the construction of the world also went into the construction of that language that he created. And if that language that he created, just as there is a balance in the world, and if at any point in time that balance begins to become shaky, there are all sorts of problems. Yeah, which reminds me, who was it? In November. In November, there were reports in the papers over here that this winter is going to be a very dry one. And by the end of the winter, it's going to be Pashit. It's going to be like the Sahara Desert. It's the warming trend in the world, and it's coming down on Israel. And I remember as clear as day, I said to my wife, you should know, there is nobody in the world, there's no meteorologist in the world that can ever predict the weather in Eretz Yisrael. Because there's only one power in charge, and that's the Rabbeinu Shalom. And he can take all of the meteorologists with all of their calculations and tell them that they're Kurdish. By the way, this is my greatest feeling of well-being, I say, comes from this. You will recall, 11 years ago, the winter after the Gulf War was a winter of unbelievable amounts of rain. Bashir Eretz Yisrael was drenched and snow and the works. There were flowers that hadn't been seen for 100 years in Eretz Yisrael. We were sitting, we went in for a bite someplace. I don't know why, so I saw somebody eating something that looked interesting, so I asked them what it is, and we got into a conversation. I'm one of those people that has a lot of difficulty. When you give me a menu, I could have seen it 1,000 times. I get all confused. I get all nervous. I get all tense. I don't know what to order. So, you know, I look around and see what other people, because they're smarter than I am, and they know, of course, exactly what to order. So this guy, I don't even know what to do, a bacha, chamuche, whatever it was. All right. Anyway, he comes from the Golan, not a religious fellow. We've started talking, come from the Golan. He says, come to the Golan. You can't believe what it looks like in the Golan. Wherever you go, there's water flowing. It is green. It's lush. It hasn't been that way in years. Got it to go on. And we're trying to find a day or two pusher to drive up to the Golan and come back. So the piano artist, if last time around the great bracha came after the Gulf War, if the winter now preceding it is one of so much rain, then you know what? I want to say on the weather, precisely what Rashi in Yechezkel said about the ingathering of Jews to Eretz Yisrael. So Rashi says, I'm bringing the end of the year now to the beginning. You should have paid attention to the fact that I brought them all here. And the one who brings them out from the Amim and brings them here didn't bring them here to give them into your hands. The Gemara says, to whom does the Rebbeinu give parnasa? And in the Gemara's terminology, rain is parnasa. God gives parnasa. The Gemara said, Gemara times lechaye, to living people, he gives parnasa. If there's a downpour of this sort, and when it's coming in again, we're in for it again tonight. Yeah. With so much rain, the Rebbeinu gives that to alive people. So the fact that we have rain preceding whatever may happen next week is a sinner toad, and the Yidatsam of Nehavim Shemayim, Shevinapo, who are Shev Yishnu to our Yehudim, Hamel, the Saneim, Char, Purim, Sameach, and Seif. And remember, no classes next week, even though Tuesday is Nishtahim and Nishtaher in Yerushalayim. It's one of the most unusual days of the year. It's a very special day to be Nishtahim and Nishtaher.
Yes.